Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. You want to have some fun?
Yeah, we want
to. Okay, are you ready? Sing along now.
My name is Stanley Bookman, and I come from the world of ink. I live in a town called Storyville that's closer than you think. Just hop online and you will find my online world of fun. There's stories, poems, and features on everything under the sun. Just type in Stories for Children Magazine at .org to the end. Come join me in reading adventures, we're sure to become good friends. So come to the world of ink with me, we'll share a story or two. We'll go all over the world, you'll see, we'll have fun the whole day through.
Follow me to the World of Ink.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Stories for Children show at Block Talk Radio's World of Ink Network with your hosts, Via Springer, Chris Quinn Christopherson, and myself, Irene Rose. We're also very excited to have Marsha Cook on the line with us today. It's truly an honor to be here with you today. It's Monday, September the 26th, 2011, at about 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time. As always, Stories for Children can be listened to live on the first and third Monday of the month here on World of Ink Network, or you can listen to it on demand at any time you'd like at the same address or on iTunes. Just search for World of Ink Network and you'll find our shows on iTunes. If you have any questions for our guest today, please call at 714-242-5259. That's 714-242-5259.
Thanks, Irene. That was a great introduction, as always, and we love having Irene with us. And we're excited, as you said, because we have Marsha Cook with us filling in.
Hi.
We changed our time. Yeah, we changed our time today. Normally, we're around 2 p.m. Eastern time, and between stuff that I had going on with my own kids and with our guests, it was just we needed to push the shot to a later time, so Marsha decided to help out and pop in just in case we were down a person or if I wasn't able to make it because I was out running around before the show started. So we're always happy to have you with us, Marsha, because you're just a ball of energy.
Thank you. Yeah, I think everybody thinks if they can't find me, they'll just turn on the radio and there I am when
that's
I don't know
true.
Where I am.
Yeah, if you can't find Marsha Cook and you want to know where she's at, just turn on Blog Talk Radio World of Ink Network and you'll find her. She'll call you on the air.
You're on a lot.
Yes, yeah. I am.
You're on more than I am. I'm on a lot.
You're on.
Anyhow, our guest today is Fiona Ingram, and we're excited to have her with us.
Yes.
And as I said, we were kind of juggling what time our show is going to be today because she's actually calling from South Africa, which makes it really fun and unique just because besides having, we're just talking about the show, that it's daytime for us here in the U.S. and Canada. It's the evening over there. And then I totally forgot about it, but we're going into the fall season, and they're going into the spring season. So we're even opposite when it comes to weather. So we have a lot of fun to talk about on this show from her great book series, The Chronicle of Stone, to her book, The Secret of the Sacred Scarab, and then she has a second book that just finished up that she'll be releasing soon, so we'll ever talk about that. So welcome to the show, Fiona. We're glad to have you here.
Yes, we are.
Hello, everyone. I'm very happy to join you this evening. Well, my evening.
Yeah, your evening.
Yeah.
It'll be our evening soon. We'll have enough on-demand of listeners later this evening, on our daytime that we'll be tuning in. So, yes, definitely. Early evening to late evening, depending on where you are, I guess, in the globe.
Yeah, because everybody is different places. I mean, that's the good thing about the show is that it goes everywhere. That's you don't know, where everybody is sometimes.
So, Fiona, you've been currently touring your book with the World of Ink Tour this month in September, and which is coming, we have a few more days before the tour concludes. So I'd love you to kind of talk to us a little bit about the book that you are touring, which is the Secret of the Sacred Scarab. What I love about this is, you have a background in writing because you're a journalist by trade and have gotten into writing books, but you also like to travel, which is what actually inspired your book. So I would love for you to kind of tell us a little bit about the backstory and your trip to Egypt that inspired the story, because it's such an interesting thing to learn and hear about.
Well, especially kids like that. They like to learn about different places,
Well, strangely enough, Egypt was not my first choice. I love Europe. I love old cities. I love museums. I love history. And when my mother a few years ago said that she wanted to travel, she felt that she was getting on a bit, and she wanted to travel, let's say, one last time. And she said, I want to go to Egypt. And I said, oh, Mom, let's go to Europe. And she said, no, I want to see the pyramids before I die. Yeah. And in case anybody's worried, my mother's still alive, still
but,
well. So it wasn't.
Well, you can take another trip, though. You can take another trip.
She's a little frailer now, but she's still mentally very enthusiastic, and she says she can watch on television. She's an armchair traveler now. Uh-huh. Anyway, my mom said, well, I'm paying, darling, so just come along and enjoy yourself, and we'll go on a cruise down the Nile. And, of course, me, ever the avid historian and researcher, I was already planning the amount of temples I would go and visit. My mother's idea was obviously to sit with a lovely cool drink on the decks of this cruise ship and float down the Nile. Well, I'd be sweating and clambering and climbing over rocks and deciphering hieroglyphics. So you can see my mother and I travel differently.
Yeah.
And then she said to me, let's take my two young nephews. They were 10 and 12 at the time. They had done Egypt in school, very intelligent, bright, inquiring minds. And it seemed like a marvelous opportunity for them. They loved it.
Yeah.
The tour guides loved them because they were so eager. They were asking all the right questions. And the tour guides, when you go with a proper tour, all these people have educations. You can't just be a tour guide. You have to practically have a master's degree in Egyptian history. It was such an eye-opener. It was absolutely the most fascinating experience. I must just interject and say one of my very first books, I'm a total bookworm. I'm a book devourer rather than a bookworm. And one of my very first books that my mother gave me was the Time Life series. I got Ancient Egypt. My brother got Imperial Rome, and we shared Classical Greece. So we kind of cut our teeth on quite big books when we were still quite young. So I'd always been interested in Egypt, but from a more academic point of view, to actually go and see these incredible temples was just mind-boggling. We had such a wonderful experience, and odd little things happened, amazing little things happened that I later found myself putting into the book. Like one of my nephews, as boys are, nearly fell down a slope when we were visiting the Sphinx. And I don't think he would have killed himself, but I wrote that in as part of the plot. And throughout the book, lots of little things happened. But I hadn't thought of writing a book. I just thought of having a holiday. And when we came home and we'd looked at all the photographs and we'd sorted out the souvenirs, I said to my mom, I think I'll write them a short story, something really amusing, something unique they can keep, and they'll be the heroes. And I started writing in pen, in red pen. My first word was Egypt. I thought, well, that's a very good start, Egypt. And the story just grew. And halfway through the story, and then I was drawing on legends and myths and ancient history, and it's almost like a cauldron with all the liquids bubbling out. And I just thought, oh, no, I can't finish the book. It'll just have to be part of a series. And that was it. I just carried on. It just carried on and on and on.
Yeah. Well,
so that was it.
Yeah, no, it's a great book, and I love it. And what I love, too, is because it is a middle grade adventure, and your nephews, when you went on your trip, happened to be 10 and 12, which is right in that age group for middle grade readers. So, I mean, you had two boys with you that, you know, as you said, you're able to take some of the things that happened during the trip and put into your books. I mean, you just had really the recipe for a really great book, which, you know, sounds like, you know, is now obviously emerging into a series as well. Now, I'm curious, was there any particular pyramid over there in Egypt that inspired you more with its history versus any, I mean, there's so many of them over there. I mean, you know, most people know about King Tut and King Tut's tomb, but, I mean, there's a lot of different pyramids that, you know, have a, I mean, a lot of, you know, similar kind of background history with, you know, mummy curses and all kinds of craziness that supposedly the ancient Egyptians put on the different tombs. So was there one that stood out more to you when you were writing your book, or was it all of them?
Well, you have to see it to believe it. You have to actually be there, standing at the bottom, and trying to imagine how they moved 2.3 million blocks of stone.
Yeah.
Because the Great Pyramid contains 2.3 million blocks of stone. And these are not bricks. These are huge blocks. And you can see the Great Wall of China from outer space, but you can also see the Great Pyramid. And it's higher than the Empire State Building. So it's the most miraculous feat of engineering, given the fact that nobody knows how they did it. And they've come up, you know, scientists have come up with ideas of, oh, they built ramps and they did this, they did that. But they actually didn't use the wheel. They used like logs of wood to roll. They used rollers. And there's no indication of leftover building materials to indicate how they did it. So when you say that they were masters of engineering and building, once you're there, you see it. You know, you'll see a postcard, and there's a tiny little camel, and then behind is this massive pyramid, and you have no idea how to actually think of it in terms of yourself. That was incredibly inspiring.
When you travel, I would assume, because I have had a writer on, his name is William Maltese, and he always travels, and that's why he says his books, because you can read so much, but when you actually see it, it's a whole different world.
I agree with you completely, because one reviewer wrote to me and said, I know you went there. So I wrote back and said, oh, thank you for such a lovely review. How do you know? And he said, I could just feel it in the writing.
Yeah.
I thought, my gosh, isn't that amazing? My gosh. I was like, what did I do that was so special? But I don't think I did anything special. I think I just wrote from the heart. I mean, the heat is unbelievable. When I talk about the heat, yes, the sweat pours off you, and then the food is incredible. The cucumbers, it's like eating candy. I'm not particularly fond of cucumbers, but once I'd eaten Egyptian cucumbers and Egyptian olives, and in the book, for example, and the one boy is crazy. Justin's crazy about olives, and my older nephew was crazy about olives. So I've incorporated all those elements that, I mean, you never think of children back in their hometown eating olives. It's quite an exotic food. But in a different country, in an exotic country where the food is so different, it was important. It was important as an experience, and it was important in the book.
I know that my nephew wants to go to Egypt now because he read the book just a few weeks ago.
Well, that's a good thing, though. That's a very good thing, though, that after, for you know, especially for boys, it's really difficult to keep their attention.
Yes, it is.
When they're reading, and that is great that you can.
He was glued. He was absolutely glued. Yeah. So that was wonderful.
Well,
so wonderfully written.
My nephews as well. They never got bored. They never whined. They never said, "Can we watch television?" They were exhausted.
Wow.
They put their heads on the pillow and boom, they were asleep. Up in the morning.
Wow.
Which temple are we going to?
Yeah.
Hieroglyphics. They were drawing and sketching. In fact, on my website, which is filled with photographs that we took on our trip, and the actual journey of the book follows the journey that we as visitors made. And what's so interesting is that my youngest nephew, who's like the character of Adam, is quite a skilled little artist, and I've put his pictures. He drew things. You know, he drew things for me, and it was just lovely. I scanned them, and I put them in as part of the memorabilia of this website.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's
you know, I noticed when you, I know I was looking up, you know, I didn't know I was going to do the show, and so I was looking everything up, you know, that you have about you, and you're the publisher, right, of these books?
I published with iUniverse.
Oh, you did iUniverse, okay? Cause
yes.
So, what? So you have complete control of what you do now.
Yes.
Because you're in charge. So, do you feel that? Are you happy that you did this, or, you know, did you try to get a traditional? Because this is always. I mean, you're very successful, and your book is really good, and you're very intelligent, and you've been a lot of places, and you've done a lot of things, and you self-published. And what does that do for, I mean, how do you feel about that in the market now? Because this is such a question that everybody's asking, should you, shouldn't you? I have self-published, and now I am traditionally published, but I do think people should do that.
Well, I didn't know any better, I'll be honest with you.
Okay.
South Africa has absolutely no publishing industry to speak of. There are a couple of little homegrown people, but unfortunately South Africa, it's always, if it comes from overseas, it must be better. If it's an overseas writer, they can be the rottenest writer in the world, but they must be better. I mean, that's why South Africans like Charlize Theron and people like that go overseas. They become enormously famous, but they didn't become famous in their own country. But I believe that's a problem all around. An artist never celebrated in his own territory. I sent to about 35 British agents. I thought, well, my links as one of the last outposts of the British Empire, South Africa, our links are with Britain. So I sent to 35 agents, and 33 of them sent back the standard letter, which was kind of, oh, thanks but no thanks and blah, 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 whatever. And two of them said, the one woman said, I would love to represent you, but somebody has written something very similar. I thought, what? What?
You know,
anybody write,
you know,
anything similar?
That's,
and
you know,
then
that's just an out, right. Everybody doesn't write alike. You can't write like it. Nobody writes like you. Everybody has their own style, you know.
Well, I must just tell you, I subscribe to everything, and I've never, ever seen anybody write a similar book. So I thought, well, maybe it never saw the light of day. And the second agent said, you can write, and that's the first thing you need to know. Your characters are nicely defined. Your story is exciting. Your action buckets along in a good way. Cut your book in half and persevere. So I cherished it. I still got that letter. I cherish it. So then I thought to myself, well, nobody wants me. I never knew that you were supposed to have 600 rejections and trawl the world and try everyone.
Yes.
I didn't know what to do. So a friend of mine said, oh, a friend of mine had her romance book published. Why don't you try these people? So I thought that was it. I borrowed heavily against my house, published the book. I spent a lot of money doing what people suggested. A, get it properly edited. Get it properly this. Get it properly that. Have a decent cover. If you're going to have illustrations, don't let your best friend do it. Let a proper artist do it. And then I did their whole marketing thing, and then after 3 months they said, well, listen, darling, we've done what we promised to do for you. Now it's over to you.
Yes.
And by the way, even traditionally published people have to do their own marketing.
You're absolutely right.
Oh,
and I will talk about, we'll talk about that in a little while, because that's very true.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's interesting, though, okay, is because you have won awards. You have a great book.
Yes, I have. I'm amazed.
No. That's why I'm bringing this up. Because, I have to say that your website is extremely organized, because I've not seen someone do as organized as you have every interview. And this is what people should do when they do. I did not do this exactly for Virginia's, because Virginia does a great book tour, okay? And you did the one thing, like where you say on all your interviews, you have interview with Mom Prefers, Writing Mama,
yes.
You know, and,
yes.
And that is, I have not seen anybody do it the way you do it, because I'm very conscious of this now, because I'm working on some things. With Virginia, we're trying to work out what's good and what's not, because some of the things we know are not, and a lot of the things you say are very true. And the way you did it, you have actually taken the time to write all of these down that you did, which is the right way to do it. Virginia, would you agree on that?
Oh, yeah, I'm here.
Because I saw this, and the way you did it, see, everybody's looking for someone to come out and do a dance and a song in the website. It doesn't do, you can't do that. It's not how it is. You have it down listed in the way it should be, because you have paid attention to what Virginia said to do.
But I think my background in research, my background in editing, this is magazine publishing, which is a world away from books, but I like to be structured. I've read a lot of articles. There's a lovely lady called Joanna Penn who does a lot of marketing, and she's interviewed me before, and she and a lady called Penny Sansevieri, who works with author marketing experts, and they give so much good advice. And I'm like a sponge. When I first started out, I thought, I know nothing. I shall create this marketing file. I will do everything that is possible. And I did. And I just thought, if someone wants to know what I've done. I go, oh, well, I've got this media page on my website. Would you like to look at it? Yeah. And choose whatever you like from it.
Right, this is great. No, but it's really organized, and honestly, because I think this is a huge problem now. Because even, like you're right, even people when they get traditionally marketed, what happens is you get the book done, and then you go, okay, now what? And that really is the question. And everybody does not do what you do, and you just went through it all, and you just did it. And you've won awards. So, I mean, you can do this. So this is why I'm bringing this up, because people think, oh, self-published, they can't do this. That's not true. A good, like, actually the name of my radio show, part of it, is A Good Story is a Good Story. And that's really what it is. When it's a good story, good things happen. When it's a bad story, it may not work. But you had it edited. You did everything the right way. And that's why your book is going to be successful. And it is successful because people are liking it. That if it's 5 people, 10 people, 100 people, I'm learning now in my head to just say, you know what, 100 people may have liked my book. Maybe 100 people haven't, you know, maybe 100 more will read it, maybe another 100, but it has to be good.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I'm sure that you've picked up a book from, let's say, a famous, dare I say, famous writer, and you think, oh, wow, can't wait to get my teeth into this. And halfway through the book, you think, how did they publish this?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he publishes mental.
I mean, we say this every day.
We say this.
Yeah, I was just say, I just experienced this because I have an author friend, and I'm not going to say who because it's an actual friend, but mm-hmm. And I have a few of them, so I can generalize this enough. But you know, they're on one of they're beyond writing their first series of books. They're on a multiple series of books now, and I won't say which one it is. But I picked it up and. I loved a lot of the books. I loved their first series when they first started off. I've loved some of their other ones since then. But there's this one series I picked up, and I read it, and I'm just like, was this an off day for you? And I know why I got published, because they're now a New York best-selling author.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to narrow my scope a little bit on who my friend is, but I have enough of them, so I'm still safe. But... But, and I'm not saying it's a bad book, it's a great book, it's just not the voice and style I'm used to from them, and even from, like, the other books that this one's sandwiched between. And I'm just looking at it, just kind of like, it's not a bad book, but I'm just like, really? It's got to just be because your name's starting to get so known now, that's why it got picked up, because, it could have used some more work. And I mean, and I can't judge, I mean, I've gone back and reread my picture book, and I... And I love my picture book. I still market my picture book. I think it's a great picture book. It actually just won a Silver Quill Award out here in Utah.
It is a
but,
good book. It's a very good book.
And I love it, but I read it now going back, and I know a lot of authors do this. You go back and you look at your book, you're like, oh, I could have done that differently or this differently. And, you know, maybe it's, you know, it didn't deserve the 5-star ranking. It was probably more of a 4-star ranking, really, you know, when you look at it in hindsight. So, I mean, we all do that. I mean, we even do it to our own work. But
right.
I agree. I think sometimes things get published because – traditional, and I think this is why a lot of new publishers new writers can't get published, is because, you know, the traditional publishers, the big ones, I'm talking like the big names, like Scholastic, Random House, you know, HarperCollins, all of them, and they're great publishers. However, they have their network of authors that they know, I call them the cash cows, that they know will sell because people know their name, and so anything that their name's on, they know they can sell it. So it's not if it's good, it's just they're like, well, I'd rather publish this book that's so-so by, you know, James Patterson, and I can use him because I don't know him as a friend, even though I love his work, but, you know, published by James Patterson versus, you know, over here by Susie Homemaker that nobody knows.
So, yeah, but, you know, they're a guaranteed audience.
Right, exactly.
Their previous fans are a guaranteed audience, but...
it's different now, though. I
hope I don't get crucified for saying this, but I was in the library. I've never read anything by Jodi Picoult, but... It doesn't appeal to me. It's not the kind of thing I would pick up. But anyway, I was standing in the library, and I know she's written a phenomenal amount of books, and they're very interesting themes, because I read the reviews of books, even if I don't read the books. I like reading movie reviews and book reviews. It gives me an idea of what's going on. And a woman said to a friend, oh, no, don't bother with that. She said, they're all the same now. I was shattered.
Yeah.
I quickly scampered over and said, God, gosh, what is it about this book that's the same as any other book that she's written? But I think that does become a problem, is that fans eventually become turned off. Eventually, you know, you beat them. You beat them so hard, the fingers slip from the rail, and they say, I'm not going to buy books anymore.
Yeah. But, you know, the whole publishing is all different now. I mean, it really is. It's very different now. You're right, because now there's so many writers. So if all of a sudden you start saying, well, their books aren't that good, you can go, and there are millions of other authors now. So,
yes.
It's, you know, it's like, okay, I don't like them, so I'll go to them. But, see, the thing is, when you try to get a book published, they want what your friends were telling you is the illustrations, which is true. The illustrations, you send it to a publisher, and you can't send illustrations. Okay. Otherwise, they think you're a novice and you don't know what you're doing. Okay. All right. But the other side of the coin is when some stories do not have any illustrations attached, and if the person is not creative, and a lot of editors are not this, they edit, but that doesn't mean they're creative exactly, and they can't get the story. No, I'm trying to. I'm saying some. No, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean. They may not see the same things you see, and so they go, no, this isn't of interest. But that's really not true. Put illustrations to that book, it changes the whole book.
No,
well,
I agree.
Well, then people buy it.
I mean, simple things like, in the beginning of my book, there's the Egyptian god Thoth. No, I don't have a speech defect. Thoth is very, very important. He's like the central focus of the whole mystery. And there's something that the children find out. They find out as they translate these hieroglyphics. But the keen-eyed reader, and let me tell you, every 10-year-old is a keen-eyed reader. They will find everything that they are supposed to find in that book. In the very beginning, I have this illustration, and I have this, like, incantation that the children must read, and it's so important. Now, without it, yes, you'll get the picture, but with it, you get more than the picture. And it's just those little elements that are so very important. And as a writer, you need a bit of creative leeway with your publisher to say, oh, no, please, please put this in. Oh, please put a map in. A map is important. You know, it's very difficult to travel around a foreign country in your head. You have to look at the map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think don't you have an option for this movie, for this book too, the World Picture Film?
Yes, I have a movie option, and I'm just going to say, I believe in social media. I hate doing it. It's time consuming to get all those links and blah 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 and paste them and cut and copy. But I religiously, I've been very fortunate. People have liked my books and they've been so kind. They've given me great reviews, and I tweeted this review, and some guy direct messaged me and said, what a great review. I loved it. It made me feel young again.
Good.
Oh, somebody liked
great.
It. Then he direct messaged me again and said, I think I'll buy your book. I was so excited that someone had thought that they would buy my book. Then he found me on Facebook, introduced himself, and I love film. I love the theater, and that's my background, and I love all that. And after lots of conversations about the movies, he said, well, you know, I'm in the film industry. Now, of course, I knew that, but I wasn't going to suggest my own book as a movie. And he said, I'm thinking of offering you a movie option. Would you be interested? So I said, well, yes. So he said,
yes,
leave it with me. So I left it with him, and everybody kept saying, oh, no, 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 phone him, email. I said, no. I'm honored that they actually asked me. And if it doesn't come to anything, it doesn't matter.
Right.
I will leave it with him. And in October last year, he said, right, I'm back. I've got the option ready. Are you still interested? And that was it. We've been to-ing and fro-ing the contract.
It takes time. It takes a long time with an option. It takes a very long time.
Does take a long time. Because their lawyer says, oh, no, 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 don't say that. And then my lawyer says, oh, no, 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 they're going to skin you alive. No, no, don't agree to that. You're so confused because you're sitting there thinking,
people. I know. No, that's because a lot of times they don't realize this could take a very long time. They're not when they option your book, they're not taking away your rights to sell it. You can go out and do whatever you want. They're just going to sell it to get a movie. So you're not really losing anything.
It's just that, as everyone keeps telling me, oh, the merchandising, darling, the merchandising. And I had no idea before Harry Potter what merchandising could do. I mean, you see a few Spider-Man duvets and
curtains. That's a biggie. That's a big thing. The merchandising is huge. But you know what, though? It's interesting, though. But people, I know people that have not had movie options, but they do sell T-shirts and they do a lot of, like, mugs.
Well,
and,
I was
going to
say, the Fancy Nancy books are a great example of that because, I mean, there's dolls for her and all kinds of stuff. And it's a picture book.
Yep. And that's how it happens. That's actually how it happens.
Yeah, I want to kind of bring up the fact that you had the background that, you know, with the movie, you know, with theater and stuff, and the fact that you have the movie option out there and everything. I think one thing about your book, and I'd love you to kind of talk about this, is, you know, kind of like same thing with Harry Potter. I mean, your book is one of those cross, you know, generations, genre, however you want to put it, kind of book, how Harry Potter was. I mean, it was also started off as a middle grade adventure book that adults fell in love with, and of course, by the time you got to book 7, it was more of a YA because, you know, the audience grows up with Harry as well. But it's such a fine balance, and we've kind of touched around it as we've been talking to you, and you've kind of touched on it a few times, you know, in your answers to us. But, you know, when you're drafting a story, even though you're writing for the middle grade, you know, audience, you know, usually around a 10-year-old is usually pretty much in the middle of the age group is who your target readership is. And what I'm trying to say is I mean, because you guys are trying to talk about the editors and things, and I told Marcia to be nice, only because I edit as well. I'm a freelance editor. But the one thing that I've noticed being an editor and stuff is when stories come across my desk, and I'm looking at it with the editor eye, not my writer eye or any other, or as a reader, I'm actually looking as an editor and to see how sellable something is when I'm looking to see if it's going to target, you know, its readership like it's supposed to, like your book. But I'm also looking to see if it's going to capture an adult's attention because it needs to, because usually it's the adult, be it the grandmother, the mom, the dad, whoever's going to buy the book. Your book does that. I mean, you really walk that balance well with your story, where you capture, you know, like you said, you know, you have the one review where the person's like, oh, and I felt young again, you know, just by reading the review, and I read your book, and oh, my gosh. And it's such a hard thing, and I'm just kind of curious, what do you think you know, I don't know, I mean, does this come naturally to you, or is it something that you somehow realize, oh, I need to make sure I have this in there as well? I'm just kind of curious, what do you think lends to that?
I'm going to probably really reveal myself as a fly by the seat of my pants kind of girl. I before I started writing, I used to read authors and saying, and something just happens, and the characters come alive. And the next minute, the character's on the page. And I thought, oh, what rubbish. You know, from the editorial point of view, if you've got structure and planning and beginning and middle and ending and exposition and wrap it all up, only when I began writing did I realize that all those things happen. I don't consciously try to create, there's a lot of humor with the adults. The adults are really, really amusing because they're being themselves.
Right.
And
that's natural, right? That's natural.
Yeah, in a child's world, there are always adults. Always.
Yeah.
There's always an adult. You're never free of adults until you're an adult.
Right.
And then you can go and live on an island.
Right.
And how kids interact, how they see these adults is actually important. Because through the children's eyes, adults often reveal their weaknesses. I mean, there's some wonderful characters. The Brigadier's wife, she's such a mean, nasty, cow. She's so horrible to the kids because she doesn't like kids. And yet, suddenly, I mean, when the bus is hijacked, she becomes this incredibly brave person. She discovers herself in a way. And, well, I was astonished. I never knew she had it in her.
You don't write with an outline then?
I do.
Right?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, no, absolutely. The whole book is outlined. In fact, the whole series is outlined. But what happens is I've got my general story. I do 75 words, and then I do 125 words, and then I do 250 words, and then I start fleshing it out. And I've got my plot points, like chapter one, I'll do this, 2, 3, 4, 5. And, of course, it changes along the way. What happens in those chapters surprises me, but I keep, after every chapter, I write a synopsis of the chapter, and that sounds very weird to do it
afterwards. No, that's a good
idea,
actually.
I like that. I've never heard that before.
That's a very good idea.
Don't do it before. Don't do it before.
Mm-hmm.
do it afterwards. Then you'll see if you shot somebody in the beginning of the scene and then you forgot that they're dead and then they walk out with everybody. Or, you know what I'm saying? You leave yourself open for creative elements. I mean, for example, the one big thing in the book is the betrayal. The children are betrayed by the tour guide, Layla. She betrays them. Mm-hmm. No one knows why. I didn't even know why. Until I was in the middle of the scene, I thought, because Abraham Faza, their friend, is her father. And he was kidnapped. I thought, oh, Eureka. But because I left it open, I wasn't sure what she was up to. Because I left it open, when it
came.
That's
exciting, though. That's what makes your stories exciting, because if you can get that aha moment, which is what it is, then people will get that, too.
Well, and what I love, too, is you let your characters kind of, I mean, not that you let them completely, because I've heard, you know, especially when you take writing courses and stuff to hone your skills as a writer, or when you're starting off as a writer to learn the tricks and trade of the business, so to say, you know, though I say, well, don't let your characters, you know, run away with the story, but I think to some degree, and I know people are like, how in the heck, and you're the one who's creating these people, but to some degree, your imagination kind of takes over
that subconscious
mind, which becomes your characters. And so I love the fact you kind of let them somewhat have somewhat of a rope to kind of lead you or hang themselves by.
That's true, though. I think sometimes you do that because I think a writer, sometimes that you just, when you're writing the story, the characters do tell the story sometimes. And sometimes when you go back and read it, like maybe another year or so later, you go like, you don't even know what place you were in your mind to get you to that place. And
it's very hard. It's like being two people in one person when you're writing. Mm-hmm. You've got to have that writer's discipline. Okay, so you're the red light, the green light, the amber light. But to let that creative side have an incredible amount of freedom and to trust where it's going. Or you can always just delete it. I mean, somebody's going to hack it to pieces
and edit
it.
That's a good thing, right.
Yeah, you're never going to submit ramblings to an editor. You're going to submit it as tight and as best as you can. So trust yourself that you're going to go back and thought and say, oh, good Lord, this is such a long speech. My audience will have fallen asleep by now. I better hack it into pieces.
Yeah, that's true.
I just think that's a great point, because a lot of writers, you know, they just want to create an outline that's all so complete, you know, chapter by chapter, scene by scene, and so it goes. But when you have that freedom that, you know, you allow yourself to have these empty spots and spaces where you can fill things, I think it's absolutely awesome. You know?
Yeah. No, but I think that you have to give yourself freedom, and you also have to give some discipline, but you get it at the right spot. You know, as free as we all are, we still are writing a story, and we want it to make sense. And, you know, sometimes after you read it, you go, what was I thinking? And then you can switch it, you know.
But if you do the synopsis of each chapter,
that's
at
a good
the
idea.
End of the chapter, what did
that's
I say
wonderful.
Here?
Yeah.
What am I trying to prove? How have I linked the plot? Have I left some loose end? And if I've left a loose end, I print it out and then I put a little red mark to say, okay, loose end needs to be tied up.
That's wonderful. Wow.
See, I hate loose ends. When I go to a movie, I'm very picky because I like everything to go in a circle from beginning to end and middle. I like to know everything. So I'll say to my husband, I'll say like, well, why didn't they say this about the mother? Nothing. I said, they didn't get to the character because we don't know anything about the character. And, you know, I like everything somewhere along that line within the story. Something. You know, they just didn't get there from no, like you're saying, you know, there's adults around. You can't just have two people in a story with nobody else ever mentioned.
Yes.
You know, you wonder what was happening in their life. And I think it's important to do that. So that's why the synopsis after is probably a very good idea, because then you didn't forget anything.
Well, that's what I love about what I love about it, too, because, like, the one thing that I notice, and obviously because I'm not the one who's writing when I'm editing stuff, I'll be reading something, and I kid you not, I just wrote a book where at the beginning of the book there was a teddy bear, and the story was being kind of told through this stuffed teddy bear's perspective. And I get to the middle of the book, and all of a sudden there's this, like, stuffed dog. I'm like, where did the dog come from? What happened to the teddy bear? Wasn't it a teddy bear?
Right,
and I had to go back to the first chapter to go see, and I'm thinking, you know, I love the synopsis idea, and I mean, I'm not a big one for outlines. I have, like, a very loose outline, but I like the synopsis thing for myself anyways as a writer. because then I don't have to sit there and flip back to chapter whatever to go, now what did I say here, so I don't, you know, put him in like red shorts when he was wearing blue shorts just a while ago.
Right.
You know, simple things like, but it's so easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Very.
You know, like you said, you could have killed somebody off, and the next thing you know, they're walking around in chapter 9. You're like, yeah.
And especially with children, children and young adults, they will, on everything, they'll be watching everything you do, and they'll go, well, why didn't that happen to this? Why didn't that happen? Yeah. No, they're, yeah. Good question.
It's funny. When I was doing the website, I have lovely designers, and anyway, the guy was designing it, so he put a few Egyptian words in, and you spell out the words. It's welcome. It's written in Egyptian. And every now and again, there's all sorts of stuff. And I said, well, do you think they'll work it out? He said, yes, of course they will. He says, they will scour this site. They will take that mouse and put it everywhere so that they can find what you've hidden in this site.
Yeah.
He said, that's what kids are like.
Yep.
I thought, oh, okay.
Yep.
Put in more Egyptian words. Put in whatever you like.
No, right, because kids, right, it makes it interesting for kids to do
that. Yeah,
that's how
my son is. My son's, you know, he's going to be 16 soon, and he's a big one for that. When he reads stuff or is doing stuff, he wants it to challenge his brain. Even if it's not on a conscious level that he knows it's being challenged, he has to have it somehow challenge him, even on a subconscious level, or he's just as flat out bored with it.
Right.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
I do too.
Go ahead.
You don't want to be bored.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, Fiona, I have a question for you, because this is something that, you know, I write short stories and picture books, so I don't get asked this question a lot, but I've had a few of my fellow author friends who have written, you know, novels that have been asked, you know, when they write a book, I mean, usually friends, family, someone you didn't like in a future life ends up in your story as a villain, whatever, but have you ever, especially in this book, have you put yourself as one of the characters, or do you have a character you say is most like you?
I'm absolutely their aunt. Everything in that book about Aunt Isabel is me. When they said to me, oh, so what happens, Auntie Fiona, if we misbehave? I said, I'll send you home. You'll never go overseas with me again. Oh, okay. I was just kidding. And that was it. My mother is the grandmother. The grandmother who just looks at them and gives them one of those looks. The one child says, hey, Gran, he had such a cool tattoo. Do you think my parents are... Oh, forget it. You know, because Gran is just looking at him with one of her looks. I think if you can model... Well, actually, you see, I didn't know the book would end up being published. Remember, I started off with a short story. So I could do anything to myself and put myself and embarrass myself hugely in my short story. But I feel that... it has been wonderful putting myself in, but I wasn't conscious. I'm not consciously myself. I am being their aunt on the trip, and that was you know the nice part of it, because you know the children they don't try and deceive. Children never consciously try and deceive. I believe they try and do it themselves because they know that adults will automatically take them home and put them in a safe place. They will not allow them to have an adventure and nearly get killed. So they try and hide it from her, and in the end, they finally have to say, okay, Aunt Isabel, well, you've caught us, and now we're going to tell you everything, and now you're the adult, you help us sort it out. And that's, you know, I am kind of like that. Tell me the truth, and I can help you.
Well, that's like a safe feeling.
But lie to me, and
it's a safe feeling.
You'll never go overseas again.
And I think they want to feel safe. I think you made them feel safe, so I think that that's a good thing. So if you can make a child feel safe, they can explore because they know that will be you're safe. They're safe, which is what you do.
I think that's the age group as well. I think once you get to older young adults, it's quite scary. I think for a writer, it's quite a challenge for a writer because as a young adult, you should start to look after yourself. You cannot run home.
Right.
And the many elements that I mean, I take my hat off to people who write for young adults because they're entering a scary world. You know, the teenager, 15, 16, 17, they're going to have to take responsibility. So I'm
well,
happy
but one
in
of the
my...
things is though with the newer writing though, the paranormal. I don't know. That's not a safe bet for these kids because this is all, you know, just in their minds and things. That's the biggest thing now with all of the vampires and the blood and everything. And it's I truly don't know. Maybe you've said something right now that something to talk about at a later date is what they really are thinking when they're reading these books.
Now,
in their real
my
life.
Daughter, I have an adopted daughter who actually is a character in the next book, and I didn't know she was going to be a character in the book. The year I went overseas with my two nephews, my domestic worker asked me to foster her child, who was illiterate at 11. And it was, I just said yes. I thought about it for about a nanosecond. I thought, oh, what can change? And of course, your whole life changes. and she, you know, she read all the children's classics with me because, well, I was teaching her to read, so I taught her to read with what I'd been taught to read. And then finally, a couple of years ago, she said to my mother, Gran, will you buy me a book? And my mother's so excited, she nearly fell out of her chair. She said, darling, I'll buy you anything. What book? So she wanted Twilight. And my first thought was, oh, horrors. I was like, oh, my gosh. My child is going to be corrupted. She's going to be sucking blood and wanting to have sex with every handsome boy that she meets. But I said to her, but, you know, well, how do you say it to a young person, isn't this the biggest load of garbage? And she said, no, she said, it's just fantasy. She said, I'm never going to meet a vampire. She said, I'm far too young to date. And I was quite amazed at how it was very firmly in this corner of her mind called my fantasy world that's never going to really happen. Mm. And I think you can learn from kids.
Definitely.
And I do write a few articles about it, and I know that parents absolutely are horrified by some of the elements that are being thrust up now in young adult books, gory elements that are quite shocking to a parent. Mm-hmm. And it's how the young person deals with it, I think, that is important, and it's what kind of environment that young person is in. How safe is their world that they can actually explore, read about it, and go, oof, not for me. Or, yes, it's interesting, or isn't it exciting, and I want to see the film, but that's it. I have a normal life. I want to go to school tomorrow morning.
That's good. Well, that's a good way to think, right? That's the very way to think.
Honestly, I love that because, you know, like I said, you know, with my son definitely being in the teenage years, and he is a huge, which is amazing because I am not a nonfiction or I love history. I loved history when I was in high school and in college when I studied it, but now that I'm away from that academic environment, I do not purposely go pick up a book, you know, an actual nonfiction book on war. I just don't do it. But my husband is a huge history buff, and we have a lot of nonfiction books in my office that are all World War One, World War Two, and everything.
Oh, me too.
And my son loves it, and my son picks them up, and he just read a book on the Holocaust, and I'm looking at my husband like, should he be reading that? I mean, there's real pictures that they, you know, that they found after, you know, obviously, you
know. Well, they teach it in school, though.
Well, I know, but I mean, this is like actual pictures from when the Allies went in, from like the files from the Nazis, like, you know, from concentration camps.
They teach it.
Harsh. I know they do, but they don't usually show like some of the, I mean, they show some pictures. I'm talking, there's like the ones like with the babies, like what they did in there. I mean, like, harsh.
Well, because they do the Holocaust. They do because they have them where they shoot the baby. I wrote a Holocaust survivor story. So, yes, they do at the museum. They do show these pictures.
Well, at the museum, but I don't have a museum here, so my son has never been to one. So I'm looking at my husband, I'm like, should he be reading this? And he's like, well, you know, he's going to be 16. If it's too much for him, he's old enough to close the book. I'm looking at him like, is this bothering you? He's like, well, yeah, Mom. He's like, but it's like I'm going to go do this to somebody. I'm just looking at this point. You know, I can't believe that someone human like myself could actually go this, you know, I love how you put it, it was animalistic on somebody else.
Yeah.
But you've heard the phrase. There's a phrase, man's inhumanity to man. Now, your son is reading reality, and that is one of life's greatest lessons because it's not a safe fiction into a fantasy world where they've got different languages and Middle Earth and a variety of fantasy kingdoms and people chopping each other's heads off and stuff. This is real life. This has happened, and it must never happen again. And I think that your son has made the most amazing choice.
Yes, I do too.
And
I
will grow as
a
human being.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, I agree too. I just, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, 18, 19, 20. Yeah, I can see that. But I was like really surprised at his age. But, you know, but again, like you know, you're saying about your daughter, he realizes this isn't something that he would go do. And it's something that exactly like that. You know, you would never want to see happen again. And, you know, he also has Lord of the Rings. So, you know, in his mind, he's able to file it away as, you know, unfortunately, this is, you know, just like the Middle Ages. I mean, you read about the Middle Ages, a lot of people think that the stuff that they read in, like, you know, about, you know, I should say King Arthur, or I guess, or if you read the actual, like, King Arthur books that aren't written for
kids. No. I'm the expert on King Arthur. That's my second book.
I'm just saying there is some harsh stuff, though, like, when you read the adult versions of, like, the historical versions of King Arthur and stuff, you wouldn't find them, like, the kid fairy tale. But you got to realize, a lot of it, because I love the Middle Ages. That was actually my favorite subject in history. It was pretty gruesome.
Right.
So, I mean, it's I guess, and that's my sense, that he's like, well, even when you read, you know, fantasy stuff, because a lot of what they put in there is because, unfortunately, this happened in real life.
Right.
You know, they just put it in a fantasy world. And so, you're right. It's amazing sometimes how kids, they really can separate the two.
And I think it has to do with their upbringing.
With their upbringing, and I think it's the caliber of the kid. I mean, obviously, there's some kids that can't handle that kind of stuff.
And it's also good that you're his mother and that you are watching what he does.
Oh, of course I do.
Well, I know, but a lot of parents don't. So that's a good, healthy thing that, you know, you see what he's looking at.
Right. So we just brought up King Arthur, and your second book actually happens to be based on that whole...
Well, it's called The Search for the Stone of Excalibur. And in the first book, the kids, the young heroes, learn that there are 7 ancient stones. They find the first one, which is in the sacred scarab, but there are another 6 to be found before the baddies get to them. And obviously they've been embedded in either weapons or jewelry of great and wonderful leaders. And, of course, my book is all based on history and mythology, legends. I'm really not good at making up fantasy worlds with elvish languages. I admire people who can. So I just stick to the knitting, and I think I'm going to write about what I enjoy best. And in the second book, the children travel to England, where the regalia, the war regalia, which is the weaponry and anything that the war leader would be wearing, his armor, his helmet, his shield, his sword, the whole catastrophe, has been found. It's the war regalia of a Dark Ages king. Now, King Arthur lived at the end of the 5th century, beginning of the 6th century AD, which was called the Dark Ages because of the collapse of civilization. And also another reason is that there was very little documented, very little has been found. But I believe the people don't like to call it, the academics don't like to call it the Dark Ages. They consider it a very romantic title, which makes it ever so appealing. They prefer to call it post-Roman Britain. So anyway, the kids go, and the sword is in the museum, the Ashmolean Museum in Oxford, and it is going to be restored until somebody steals a stone out the hilt of the sword. Could this be the second stone? It might be. So, and then there's all sorts of amazing adventures, new sets of baddies, existing baddie, the evil Dr. Khalid, the Egyptian professor of antiquities. He's back on the scene, but he is very annoyed to find that somebody else is trying to get the stone. So it's wonderful. It's a lot of history, a lot of interesting stuff happens. It's far more dangerous as well.
Sounds like it.
It's very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I love your first book, and I'll definitely be picking up the second one, you know, not just because it's about, you know, King Arthur and all that, because obviously I just said I love that. That's my particular history area if I'm going to pick one, but just because you're a phenomenal writer, and I just can't even think of it. I mean, just listening to you right now describe it, I'm just thinking, oh, my gosh, I need it now.
I can see when you're out there that people would be very interested in reading anything that you've written. Because,
well,
you know, the way you're describing everything.
Absolutely.
I have to shut myself up when people say, so what's your second book about? I go, have you got a minute? 40 minutes later, I took my mother to have a small operation, one of those day things, you know, that day turn, and she'd have this little operation. So I had 2 or 3 hours to kill. So I was waiting in the waiting room with a few people, and they brought their mom in as well. And the woman said to me, so what do you do? And, 3 hours later, we were all talking about writing and books, and this woman said to me, please, please give me your website. I have to buy this book for my children.
See,
I want to read it myself.
That's wonderful. That's great.
Great.
You know, it is great.
My
goodness, ladies, it's almost, it's hard to believe that almost the whole hour has gone by.
Time
we
flies.
Have really had a lot of fun. We
yeah,
have had endless fun.
And it's getting, it's getting late for Fiona anyways. It's getting close to, what, 10 o'clock out there? Or past 10 now? So definitely need to let you go so you can get some sleep, so you can dream some more wonderful stories to share with everybody. But it's been great having you on the show today.
Oh, it was terrific. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely have loved having you all month long. It's part of the World of Ink Tour through Stories for Children Publishing. It's just, you know, I've visited all the different stops, and I mean, just comments and just great interviews and reviews and spotlights about you and your book. And it's just, it's been a phenomenal month and a lot of great comments. And even on the Facebook event page, there's been a lot of chatter there. So it's
well,
been a great.
Because the way you put it out, I really, on your webpage is great.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I must tell you that the blog tour has been fantastic. And I totally, totally believe in it as a way of getting out there to readers, because that's the one way you're going to get your book sold. As you as you said, one person tells 10 people, you tell 20 people,
right,
you tell
right.
30 people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, I think that's
well,
a good
thank you. Thank you. We work hard. We work hard doing the World of Ink tours because, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you do it because of the money. And I'm like, I really don't make anything off of these.
No, because
it
by
all
the time
goes
you,
right.
No, but the thing is, what we were just going to say, I just wanted to say one thing, is that was one of the things that people don't understand, that, like, when you do things like this with the blog tour, they have to help themselves also, which is why yours is so specific in what you've done, and someone can just see all the interviews by what you've written rather than just say, oh, I had a book tour. I had a book tour, and so, you know, I mean, I was here and there. But people, what you have all the specific ones down, and I think that's great, not just book tour. Yeah, I think it's a great
idea. Fiona, can you share with our listeners your website so they can go visit you and see all the marvelous stuff you have at your site?
Okay. I'll give you just my author site, because sometimes when I give people the actual title of the book site, people type it in wrong. So through my website, you can just go straight to the Secret of the Sacred Scarab book site. So mine is www.fionaingram.com.
Yeah. That's where they found all of, you can find all of this.
Yeah.
You know.
And of course,
a bio,
and
it's just really done well.
Yeah, there's everything. And, of course, you can always go to Stories, if you can't remember that, or it's like you have to play this back a bazillion times to get, you can always go to storiesforchildrenpublishing.com, click on the World of Ink tab, you'll see Fiona Ingram, and toward the bottom of her tour page has all her links as well, so you can get there as well. And you can also see her book trailer, it's there, too. And it's an amazing book.
Oh, I made that myself. I made that myself.
I love your book
trailer.
And I'm
taking a challenge. So I'm so proud of it.
It's wonderful.
I'm proud. I think it's great because I've had a few people ask me, like, well, did you do Fiona's book show? I'm like, no, we didn't do hers. I think I don't know who did it, but I love it. It's good.
Me.
Yeah, well, you know what we can do, right? Until we do it. That's the thing. That's the message. That is the message, though. You don't know, but you got to try certain things. It's great.
Yeah. Well, if I could leave you with this one last word on the whole idea of marketing. When I wrote a book, I knew nothing except that I was going to write this book. I had to learn to market, learn to promote, learn the hard way, you know, fall into the pit 1,000 times, and you just have to get down and do it.
Yep, that's exactly right.
Yep. That's exactly
that's a great point. Yeah,
that's the point. We find every day that's the whole thing. That's right. You have to do all these things.
Yeah. Which brings us to our marketing part, Marcia. So you have a show tomorrow. You get to promote your show now.
Well, I do. No, I do. You know what it is? It's the question and answer. The first time we're trying to do this, and Sam Oliver is a very interesting. And it's about, you know, a lot of people have questions about when someone passes on, how they, you know, they don't even know how to behave. They're just distraught, and they really want some help. So he's there for that. And in life, in any situation, sometimes feel like you need an angel and you want to understand more about it. And that is what he will be talking about for question and answer, because he is the guest and he is the host with me. And I think it's a good, because a lot of people have a lot of questions that they just are unanswered. And sometimes, you know, and he works in a hospital and he does help people, you know, learn how to deal with when people do die, and you're there, and you want to know how to go on. So that's something,
right.
Most of us unfortunately need sometime in our lives. So that should be good. I hope that will work out.
Yeah. And what time tomorrow is a good story?
It's at 9 o'clock Eastern, and it's 8 Central, and it is 6 Mountain. Seven Mountain.
Yeah.
7 Mountain and 6. Pacific. And
Pacific,
Fiona, what time is it there? I don't know when that would be.
It's 10:29.
What time, if it's 9 o'clock here tomorrow night, what time would that be for you?
Like 3 o'clock in the morning?
Probably hours ahead. It's about 2 o'clock in the morning.
Some of us are staying up.
If you're up, listen to it. If you're not up, if you're over there in Africa,
you can listen to it later on demand.
when you're awake.
It should be good.
And then Friday we have our show, What is Success? Where Marcia and I will be on. And Marcia, I didn't even look to see what time. Did you put that as noon?
It's noon. It says noon here. So.
Yeah, we changed it. Right, it's noon. It's 1 o'clock Eastern, noon Central.
No, if it's
11 your
time.
Well,
no, if it's noon in there,
it's
noon on our
Eastern.
Site, then it would be 2 p.m. Eastern because it's set to Mountain Time, our show page time.
No, I said 11 Mountain page.
Okay. So 1 p.m. p.m. Eastern time on Friday.
It's noon in my time.
And we're talking. Is it book clubs we're still
Body
talking
track
about?
We're going to talk also about Double Day, how they used with the Double Day books, and we're going to talk about the book clubs that the Double Day had, and the differences now, how you market. Fiona, all of the shows always enter marketing because that's part of writing a book. That's the thing.
Yeah. I think, unfortunately, writers think that they can write the book and just magically people run out and buy it. You can write the best book in the world, but unless you tell people, they don't know about you.
I think we should have you on the show, Fiona, with marketing, because I think that's really, you know how to market, and that's a really important thing that people don't know. They just want someone to
just... Oh, but I just want to write.
I know.
Yes.
That's the actress in you talking.
I used to say, too, I just want to write, and I do everything.
I say it every night, every day. I say, I cannot believe that I am doing all this promoting. I don't even want... none of us do. That's the thing. And they may think we like to do this, but we have no choice because otherwise our words will not be out there unless we do something like that. And we have to. So social marketing is the way to do it.
Well, that's why I do my workshop every so often called How to Sell Yourself. It's about, it's great you want to be a writer, but it's not just about selling your book. You have to sell yourself, too, because it's all about PR now.
I'm going to tell you something that my daughter, my foster child, I actually ended up adopting her because the parents asked me to give her a new life. So she has
a wonderful
life with me, and she goes home every year to see her biological family. So we have the perfect arrangement. She said to me, "Oh, Fiona, I wish you'd stop going on about J.K. Rowling." So I said, "Well, why?" She said, "Well, do you know that there are millions of children's writers out there, but you only ever think of J.K. Rowling because her books were made into movies."
Right.
I thought to myself, you know what? She's quite right.
There are
millions of writers out there, but it's the marketing and it's the one or two that really get to the top through movies or series or whatever, some great scoop that happens to them. But it really made me see things that I wasn't seeing. What was happening on the ground. I was so busy looking at someone that I thought it had just happened like magic.
Right.
And it was.
It didn't actually happen. They had a movie on that for her, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. They didn't wave the magic wand. It didn't go that way. It was just trial and error. She had no idea. She didn't even think she was good. That's the thing. The thing is, like I said before, if you're touching a few people's lives that have read your book, that has to be enough for us at this point because we're shooting for the stars, and that's fine to do, which I do all the time. However, but when you see someone and when they say to you, "I really liked your book," that makes you feel good. It's not about selling a million. It's like one person, if a little kid comes up to you and said, "Oh, I really like your book," and I'm going like, "This is great," because you feel good that somebody has enjoyed something you've written.
Yeah, and you never know. It takes many times of
yeah.
promoting too. I mean,
yeah.
Harry Potter, I mean, here in the U.S. didn't really start making a name for itself until the fourth book, because parents
yes.
started freaking out because of the word wicked and some of the other stuff that was
mm-hmm.
in the book.
Right.
That really
yes.
got it on the news and really got the buzz going is what happened.
Oh, dear.
we're keeping Fiona on late, so do you
yes,
have anything else to
Fiona, thank you so much.
So we can wrap this up.
Thank you so much.
Thank
Fiona.
You.
It's been really
I've
good.
Really enjoyed
so,
myself.
It's been,
it's been wonderful.
We've enjoyed having you, too. All right. Well,
okay.
We'll have to have you on another time.
Yes, definitely.
As well,
we definitely have.
Yeah.
That should be wonderful.
You're fun. Okay.
So for now, I'll say good night, America.
Good night.
Good night, Fiona.
Good night. Thank
good
you
night.
So much.
Bye-bye.
Can we go to sleep now? Maybe we should be going to sleep. That might be good for us.
I know. It's like, okay, time to go to bed.
Not
all
that
right.
we couldn't
well,
use
want,
it. Not that we couldn't use
yeah,
it.
Yeah. One more announcement before we close our show, the Stories for Children show here, is the October issue of Stories for Children magazine will be out a week from today. If everything goes smoothly, since I've had sick kids and I haven't been, I haven't been as busy in the SFC office as I need to be to run things on the magazine side. So hopefully this week I'll
get
caught up.
There's only 24 hours a day. There's only 24 hours, no matter how you look
not
at it.
Not my life. I feel like I have 50 hours a day in my life.
I know.
It feels that way.
I know.
Anyhow, so it should be out this a week from today, so I think that's October 3rd. If it's a little late getting up, everybody, I'm sorry. It's just it's been chaotic, and Irene can vouch for me because she's seen all my emails flying around. Tell everybody, I'm sorry, I'm on that. So
you're one busy lady.
when the chief editor is sick, it kind of like puts the brakes on everything.
What can you do? It'll be out.
Yeah.
When it, you know, look at it. It'll be great. And it'll be out.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. So anyway,
it
so
will.
that's everything that's going on, and we do have up that we're supposed to be doing the SFC magazine show on Saturday, October 1st. So on Friday night or Friday afternoon, we do what is success. I will officially confirm if we're going to have that show because I may cancel it or move it.
Well, what we might want to tell people is we are changing. We keep changing because we're looking for different, important, and very interesting topics. And sometimes it falls on another day, so then we do it on another show. But everything
yeah.
we're giving them is something that they might like to listen to. But whether it's on Friday or Thursday, you know, this is what we're trying to accommodate guests and things like, because people are working and writing and, you know, it's not
yeah.
easy. So
well,
I think that's the thing we're trying to do, just accommodate. You know.
Well, that show's supposed to be the overview about the new magazine issue for Stories for Children. But it's on a Saturday, and just because it's been a little chaotic in my household with sick kids, I may move it just because I
yeah.
probably
yeah.
would need a down day is kind of what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
I think
you should take it definitely, Virginia.
Yeah. So, anyways, we thank
you, Virginia.
Everybody,
you thought I took
it.
Virginia, you said, "Oh, you had a great day
what?
Writing." No, I didn't. I was trying to. I was talking to people for the shows. No, I remember you wrote
yeah.
that. No, I would have. I should have.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, we thank you for being on the show, Marcia. It's been great.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks for talking with you.
Yes, it was great.
Right.
I know.
Thank,
it was really
thank
great. Thank
for
you for having me. And
Oh, yeah. And we thank our listeners for listening to us here
yes.
on the Stories for Children show at the World of Ink Network on ZTR Radio. And so everybody have a good rest of the day, evening, morning, wherever, whatever time it is for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care, everyone.
Me to the world of ink.